I am a Wikipedia monthly donor. I believe in free information, and I don't put my money anywhere.
I didn't think those people existed. But
I know.
Here we are.
They always email me and they're like, Daisy, you are one of the 3% who ever give us money.
Can I ask, Daisy, and you don't have to share, how much a month do you give to Wikipedia?
I only give like a buck or something.
$12 a year.
No.
But when I get a job,
I'm just going to buy Wikipedia.
Folks, if you just heard a little musical ditty right there, that means that you made it all the way through the intro and now are to the actual meat of the Comedy Bold podcast. Woo! How exciting is that? Could not be more excited. Can you tell in my voice? I'm reading it off of a script. Let me introduce myself. I'm Evan Bold, and we have a lovely Comedy Bold team here today to talk about some very fun things regarding space. Let's meet the team. Let's pop on over to Max Herman.
Evan, stick to the script. Come on, I'm not first.
You're so right. Let's pop on over to Jordan Jones.
Oh, hey guys. I'm Bear Jordan Jones.
Max Herman.
Hey, that's me, Max Herman.
Hello, Navarro here.
Hello, I'm Cameron.
And today, we have brought you the treatest of treats, which I've said on this show before, but today I really mean it. Because today we have none other than Daisy Tischner. Everybody, round of applause. Round of applause.
Yes, it's me. I am the treatest of treats, and I hope whoever was previously introduced as such listens to this and sort of feels like, oh, I wasn't as good as her. That's my goal for today, I guess.
Awesome.
It's going to be a pretty realistic goal, because today, in honor of Daisy's fun new podcast that she's going to be starting called
Space Out. Or space out.
Yeah. Can I just say to the audience out there, there are jazz hands being done. Like, you can't see us, but just know you have to do the jazz hands with
and,
it.
And I want to piggyback right off what Jordan said. I want to characterize those jazz hands not as annoying musical theater jazz hands,
yes,
but as the essence of space trickling out of your blown mind after you listen to my podcast.
Right, right.
So it's space out.
Yeah.
The Big Bang, Daisy recreates the Big Bang every episode inside of your mind.
Bingo. Every episode is just an episode of the Big Bang Theory, but I do all the lines and all the characters, and it's just as bad.
And it's audio.
I feel like it might be better.
Actually, you're right. It might be better.
Oof. Slam on, content that gets a million more viewers than we do. So, woo.
Oh,
gotta love making enemies.
We're punching up, guys.
Punching up.
That's right. All the way to the top.
Hey, man, if you're at rock bottom, all you can do is punch up, right? Isn't that how it works?
No, sure. You can slip lower.
I think there are quarries and crevices. It's dangerous out there. Hey guys, what are we doing today?
It's dangerous out there, so let's get into it.
Let's get into it.
Avoid all the dangers of the outside world by plugging in those headphones and listening to this. So today, before we get into our game, I wanna hear. Give me the second interpretation of Space Out again. What is our choices here?
Right. Well, the essence. The podcast is a place. You know, more than an audio experience, it's a place where you go when you want to space out, right? So I think it's important that everyone knows that there is no pressure. There's no sort of space out aggressive language or tones. It's just, you'll barely even know that you're listening to it.
But in a good way.
But in a way that is so good.
I felt like it's the opposite of like space really has a lot of pressure. And I like that it's the exact opposite. You know what I mean? I like...
You could say it's a vacuum.
Oh.
What?
And boom, I just blew your mind. And that's step one. That's what Space Out is all about.
Yes.
And if I've done that, I've done my job.
So there you go. So we have, in honor of that, kind of prepared a little blow your mind-esque sort of game, I guess we could call it. And that game has the wonderful name...
That's a high sell.
...of... Who wants to say it? I'll give anyone. Should we, Daisy?
No.
Do you want to?
No.
Max?
It's on you. You decided.
I don't want to say it.
No, I want to see if Evan screws it up. So Evan.
No, Evan, you gotta go.
You know what? You know what, Navarro? I know that was pointed because I've been going back and forth, and I want to say that if I had said it 10 seconds earlier, I was going to say the wrong name.
But I know.
I did think
and you put it on all of us.
Now you know which one it is.
Put it on all of us, and that was terrible.
Say it like you mean it.
Okay.
Own it. Just own it.
You're right. Okay. Big moment. Okay. It's two words. Don't get my line wrong. Okay, you guys ready? The name of the game we're playing today is... Fact Me!
Yay!
Okay. Is that it?
Ew. Yeah.
Yeah, but did you mean it?
Do it again with more emotion this time.
I think you have to do it again.
I feel like under current pandemic circumstances, you can find a way to infuse that phrase with a lot of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
What's my motivation? What's my character here?
It's in the line, baby.
You're a podcast host?
You've been in your room for months and you just want to get fact.
That's exactly it.
Oh, yeah. I like that better. Run with that.
Fact me.
I bought it. I won't lie. I definitely bought that.
I definitely bought it, but I was uncomfortable.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it.
No.
You shouldn't be comfortable.
You're right.
I bought it, but I want my money back.
So there are two of the truths, and there's one of the lies.
What a way to explain this game. That is how it's going to work.
There are two of the truths.
In the most basic form, okay. There will be two truths and one lie. To broaden on that maybe a little bit, every member of the Comedy Bowl team has picked a different space topic here today to come up with two facts and one lie about, as Jordan previously mentioned. We're going to say those two facts, that one lie. Then the rest of the team all gets to vote or guess on which one they think the lie is. We don't get anything if we win. We just get the satisfaction of doing it, which, you know, satisfaction starts with the word sad. So let's get into it.
That's what facting is all about.
Starts with sad.
What?
Okay. So to take off our first round of Fact Me, who's gonna start? Who wants to begin?
I think I will. I'll take the chance.
All right, let's do it.
I chose black holes. You know why? I just wanted to test all of you. We got to stay on our toes. Let's liven up the energy with that. First, if a star passes too close to a black hole, that star can be torn apart.
That was like me in my last relationship.
Ooh, just called yourself a star. I like it. I like that confidence.
Ooh,
own it.
I'm shining.
That's too much. We gotta reel it in. We're gonna find
a
middle
ground. He says own it, and then he says reel it in immediately after.
Second, fact, if you fell into a black hole, theory has long suggested the gravity would stretch you like spaghetti, a process known as spaghettification. But newer studies suggest that quantum effects would cause the event horizon to act like a wall of fire, which would instantly burn you to death. And one final fact. For those of you really listening out there, black holes actually suck. That is, they suck things into them. I have written in my notes, bew, 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 ask if they see what you did there. This suction is caused when something is pulled into the vacuum created between the inner event horizon and the singularity. Exactly like Princess Leia getting pulled into the vacuum of space, which was a horrible scene. I just wanted to mention that I work it into conversations how bad I think that whole scene was. So I just wanted to do that. I have to do it once a day. There you go. A terrible scene. Anyway, okay. Those are all my facts. To give a quick recap, star passes too close, torn apart. Fell into a black hole, spaghettification. No. Wall of fire. Black holes suck. Vacuum. Inner part singularity.
I'm going to put my vote for black holes suck. They don't suck.
I'm also voting black holes suck. They definitely don't suck. It's a gravity thing.
That was my gut. But just to be sort of a contrarian, I'm going to say that stars are fine when they pass by a black hole. And you're overreacting and you're over-exaggerating black holes.
Is no one really going to go for the spaghettification?
Unfortunately, that is a real thing.
That one's definitely true.
How does everybody know this but me?
They're all listening to my podcast.
You're more of a penne guy.
Bingo.
All right, well, I lose.
Or an angel hair pasta.
I'm going to hop on the bus. I'm going to say number three is a lie.
Okay. Yeah, man. Number three is definitely a lie. It is a gravity thing. You fall into a vacuum. It's actually kind of funny. Well, there's no vacuum. I'm sorry. You fall. There's no vacuum. That's what's actually kind of funny.
Black holes don't suck. They're all right.
They don't suck. Come on. See? It had a moral.
Following the script, I'm up next. So I just want to give a tiny bit of background. There's an image that you should all look up right now if you can. The Pillars of Creation. It's a picture that like almost anybody will recognize. It's in like every science textbook, taken by the Hubble telescope of the Eagle Nebula. And I saw that as a kid, and I always thought that like nebulae, the plural of nebula, were super interesting. And so when asked to come up with a space topic, I immediately went for this. So here are my three facts right off the bat. Nebulae, in general, are not very dense. A nebula the size of our planet, which would be a very small nebula, would weigh about as much as a cat. Number two, in the 1700s, many distant galaxies were observed and labeled as nebulae. This wasn't changed or fixed until the 1960s when they realized that most of these were actually galaxies. And my last fact, most people know that nebulae can create stars, but nebulae can also create or be created by dying stars, making them both star factories and star graveyards.
That last one's very poetic.
Damn.
All right, so just run over them real quick. Number one, a nebula the size of our planet would weigh as much as a cat. Number two, they fixed a bunch of mislabeled nebulas in the 1960s. Number three, nebula are both star factories and star graveyards.
The poeticism of the last one makes me want to vote for that just because it, you know, if it was written by a scientist, how could it be poetic, right? But I'm going to go with the second one. I'm going to go with the second one because we made it to the moon by 1969. So the idea of miscalculating nebulas in the 1960s seems a little sussy to me.
I'm going
to
go with the second one as well.
I'm going to say, judging by how Max got his name said twice at the start of this intro because of supposed script issues, he's clever enough to have just switched the decade around a bit. And it was probably like the 1930s. He's trying to slip us up. So
right.
I'm going to go too.
All right. All right. Anybody else?
I think I'm going to hop on the bandwagon with number two.
Yeah, same here.
I made it too obvious for you. Daisy was exactly correct. It was actually the 1920s.
Whoa.
Thank you very much.
They fixed what were mislabeled galaxies.
A lot of people don't know that actually led to the economic crash of the stock market in 1929.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know, but I was actually there. I was actually the one who fixed them. Just took a lot of convincing.
Oh.
And then the Great Depression happened. I don't know why that's funny. I don't know why I said it. Okay. Who's next?
All right. So my topic is the theory of general relativity. And I'll just be kind of giving some facts on not the theory itself, but just some of its predictions and how it works in real life. Okay. First fact is that according to the theory of general relativity, it is possible for mass to travel at light speed. The second fact is that the collision of high gravity objects, such as black holes, if they collide, would cause such a thing called gravitational waves or ripples in the space-time fabric. Lastly, the theory of general relativity states that time moves slower near objects of great mass and have, you know, extreme gravitational pull. This means that it is true that time moves slower near the sun.
I'm conflicted because can't nothing travel at light speed, but also time moves slower when you're going really fast in space.
As you approach the speed of light, yeah.
I'll go with three. I'm just going to start it off. I'll go with three.
Can you go with one?
I'm going to go with one. I think mass can approach the speed of light, but I don't believe it can reach it.
I'm going to go with three, because not only did Navarro stutter on three, but he also, I really believe this light, you know, moves quicker, because I remember reading some book when I was 12, and they talked about how, you know, people were younger because they traveled in space longer. So I'm going to go with that one and use my knowledge from seventh grade English class.
Go with number two.
Ooh. Okay, changing up the game.
I'm really glad nobody said anything about that, like the fucking spaghetti thing. So I'm feeling a lot better about this one.
And Jordan, what was yours?
One.
It is one. Max is right. Mass can travel very close, theoretically, to light speed. But the rule is mass can never travel at light speed. And if it has no mass, it always travels at light speed.
Good for it.
Yeah. And then to Unfortunately, it was funny that Cam brought that up because gravitational waves were proven actually very recently, 2016, and time moves slower when you are traveling faster. That is true. But time also moves slower near objects of great mass, which is why time appears to stop near a black hole. And when, in fact, planets closer to the sun are younger than our planet.
Whoa.
Or the rocks on those planets are younger than the rocks on our planet, even if the planet itself is older.
Wow.
Because time moves slow.
That should be on Space Out.
That is cool.
Honestly, Navarro, are you free next week?
Used to be an astrophysics major. Changed it up really? Real quick. Bro.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I have an astrophysicist for a dad. So I know a thing or two.
We are farmers. Because their slogan is, we know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
Fun fact about those those commercials with J.K. Simmons, right? Yeah, I took piano lessons with his kids, so he was always at our piano lessons, and he would go, well done.
Whoa, that's cool.
That is awesome.
You know he meant it, too, because he's definitely so cool. Seen a thing or two. You know what I mean?
Bum, 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 man.
Cameron, take us into your fact realm. Tell us about the famous people.
Yes, so I'm talking about stars. Fact number one, most stars travel the galaxy with companions or in clusters, but not all stars do that. Our sun, for example, moves through the galaxy without a stellar companion. Fact number two, the oldest accurately dated star chart appeared in ancient Egyptian astronomy in 1534 BC. Number three, you can only see about 500 stars on a dark, moonless night with the naked eye from any place on Earth.
I'm going to vote number three because there's places where you can see the Milky Way galaxy.
I've tried to count the stars, and I've gotten to at least 500, so I'm going with number three.
I'm using my big brain energy to think that if I was standing on top of Mount Everest, where I could see the curvature of the Earth, but it's nighttime, right? So then I can see more of the sky because the sky is slightly curved and I can see more of it. Stay with me, even though this probably isn't scientifically accurate.
Yeah, are you above the cloud layer?
Oh,
or?
Mount Everest is above the cloud layer. Come on. You.
Oh, you made
thing
it to the peak.
Tall.
Right. Okay.
Oh, yeah. We're talking the very top. I'm running out of oxygen. It's nighttime. And
you're
I'm
picking
looking
up all your trash as you go, I hope.
Of course.
And there's poop. Remember, there's a mountain of poop that is sliding down Mount Everest because of global warming.
Oh, I remember.
And doing this at nighttime, Eben, that sounds really dangerous. I don't know if you should do this at midnight, bro.
Remember, it's the size of a ping pong table. You got about like 7 minutes up there.
I appreciate all the concern, but I did it for science, guys. So let's appreciate why I'm up here, because sure. I can see definitely more than 500 stars.
I'm also going to go with three. you've heard plenty of explanations. I'm just going to go with three.
I can go with two. I think star charts are older than that.
It was three. I'm really bad at this.
I'm right there with you, Cameron.
No, you convinced one person.
Yeah, you definitely.
I will say, like, the date that you had for the Egyptian stuff had me convinced too. Like, the fact that you put in that date almost made me not believe that one.
I actually, I'm watching Daisy as all of the facts are read out because I feel like she's the most informed. So I'm trying to read her facial expressions to get a leg up because I'm terrible at comedy games, as we know from every show on Comedy Bold. She looked confused at the date for Egyptians. And I thought, that is a weird date.
That's
okay.
Funny because I was looking at Navarro because he brought the biggest attitude when we started. And he also looked confused at the date, which felt justified. But then when you finished with the BCE, I was soothed a bit because I knew 1503 was going to be wrong for ancient Egyptians.
I just want to clarify the fact, according to this website I found, it's about 2000 stars that you can see at any given point on Earth.
That still feels low. That's interesting.
But it's at any given point. It's not like at the greatest point.
Right, because on Mount Everest, you could see double, triple. Right. I've been there, I know, guys.
In Los Angeles, you can see one star.
Yeah, exactly.
The sun.
You can see one star, Eben.
Oh, I'm not in Los Angeles right now, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Well, you're welcome.
So my topic for this game, Fact Me, is aliens. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Woo. Let's get scary. Okay, are we ready for the facts?
No, I'm scared.
Now, after that intro, definitely.
Good.
Just a quick aside. I think when we release this, you should, like, get your hair all crazy and, like, I don't know if you have a brown suit, you probably don't, but like be that like History Channel aliens guy, you should recreate that meme for this.
Yes, nice. Evan, absolutely. We should have you as close as we can. We have meme font available and we can just do aliens.
Wow. Imagine my marketing manager telling me we have meme font available. I am working at the peak of comedy prowess here, guys.
I'm so grateful to be seeing the inner workings of this studio.
Oh, that's a really generous word for us.
Yeah. Just a lot of like crack energy. Yeah.
Do you prefer the term comedy collective?
Because he's a communist. So
Gumrad.
Fair. Well, at least he's not a capitalist.
Hey, man. Screw those guys, right?
One of my facts was going to be that the scariest thing about space is actually capitalism. But it
Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, SpaceX.
All right, guys, let me tell you some facts about aliens.
But it is, sorry, just to hang on this capitalism thing for a moment. We are.
Yeah, imagine spending millions of dollars to launch your car at Mars.
Okay, yes. Exactly. We are 35 years after the Challenger explosion, mm-hmm. which was a Chernobyl-type event that could have been avoided had one person listened to scientists. So, RIP the Challenger and space travel in general, and fuck capitalism.
Yeah.
Evan, aliens, go ahead.
Dude. They really killed off the space program. I'm sorry. You brought that up and like...
Can of worms.
It's terrible. Like, it was all for naught. There are people who...
We'll continue this on another episode as well. We'll delve deep into the space race.
Yeah, please bring me back for the anti-capitalism episode.
That's actually a great idea for an episode.
It'll be a special. It'll be a Black Friday special. We'll put it out.
We run reverse ads where people can pay us to
not talk about products. Every $5, we'll remove a product we'll talk about.
Yeah. For $5.99, you can get a... Nope, I can't talk about that anymore. All right, pivot, guys. What do we got next? Facts about aliens. Let's break it down. Fact number one. Before the United States landed on the moon in 1969, Russia started a rumor that they had spotted an odd spacecraft-like object orbiting the moon in order to attempt to delay our launch. Number two, two Voyager probes were launched with a 12-inch gold-plated record consisting of whale calls, greetings in 55 different languages, and a Bulgarian folk song. Fact number three, in the history of the world, there has been a total of 96 recorded alien sightings in the history of the world.
Well, regardless of if you found a place where that is true, how could we possibly, in the history of the world, have found all of the recorded alien sightings?
Well, because, you know, they're recorded. So, like, they said, oh, look at this. This is recorded. We'll count
that. What about Jim John the Egyptian, who was like, oh, alien? Boom, wrote it down.
It's like all like a, you know, we haven't perceived it yet, so is it really recorded? It's kind of like Schrodinger's cat, but really not at all, because that's not what Schrodinger's cat is, recorded alien sightings.
Also, only 96 in the entire world, in the entire history of man?
Yeah.
That seems awfully low.
Yeah, I'm gonna call BS on that one.
I am too, and if it's wrong, I'm gonna just say that the fact was poorly delivered.
Yeah,
but because it's so low, I almost think that it's not the false fact.
Well, there was that show on like, I forgot, it was like History Channel at night when they get really weird, and that show was one episode was a different alien sighting, and that show definitely had more than 96 episodes.
I'm literally because people don't need this, doesn't need to go out and people hear that, like, we all sanction this kind of foolery, tomfoolery. Okay, no, we had, I'm gonna call out that fact simply because you told it in such a way that if we all fail, the audience needs to know it was because of you.
I'm with Jordan. Yeah,
so I'm calling it out. I'm placing all my chips on the table.
Well, wait. I'm gonna put it down as number one because that feels like something Russia would do, but I don't know if that was the specific lie.
I think you think it's number two, but I'm gonna say number three.
Yeah, I think number three.
I'm putting down number one, but three is BS.
I think Russia would absolutely do something petty like that, so I think I'm gonna go with number three for the fake fact.
Did Russia do it at a different time That is a question I have, but I'm ready for the reveal.
Oh yeah, I mean, you guys really killed this. I don't know what to say. I'm actually going to give credit though to Max because Max is correct. Russia did no such thing. Come on, why would they do that? How would they?
However, there have been 96 recorded aliens
in history from a very, very refutable source. There's been 96 recorded aliens.
If it's very refutable,
refutable. I went through my facts and made sure my facts were indisputable. If you put in a fact that you're like alienblogger69.com, right? There's 96 alien recordings.
I want to say that my fact, I mean, I also grabbed the other fact from that list of the same thing. So
nothing you say can be trusted. All right. Good to know.
Well, fact me, I guess.
Fact nice. You. And now fact me because I brought a bunch of space danger facts. Yay. My facts are also a little longer space and danger. I know we've gone over time, but here are some facts about space danger. So dark flow is the phenomenon that's just being observed at the edge of the observable universe, that galaxies are actually slipping into an unknown. So unlike Copernicum's principle that our universe is probably very similar to the rest of the universe, they're now thinking that there's a monolith or some sort of mega thing just outside our universe that is creating a universal tilt down which all these galaxies are sliding. So that's fact number one. Fact number two, Kessler syndrome refers to the collection of symptoms astronauts experience after being out of space, which can appear after only 6 weeks, but it does, they get worse the more you're out in space, but they can include space blindness, loss of inactive tissue, like the heels of your feet, muscular atrophy, increased likelihood of kidney stones because you're losing bone density and not taking in as much water. Anyways, who knows? We don't actually know the full extent of space's toll on the human body is part of that fact. Fact three, coronal mass ejections are like sun farts. They are a sudden and violent release of gas and magnetic field energy, which contain a billion tons of matter and can travel at millions of miles per hour. And if they reach the Earth can cause a lot of damage. And in July of 2012, the Earth narrowly missed a brush with an extreme solar storm. And had it hit us, we would not be like a functioning society today. We'd still be sort of trying to piece together most of our advanced technology. Okay, so those are my three facts.
And I'm going to say that it was number three because, and here's why, because in 2012, there was a huge belief that the world was going to end. And 2012, historically then, had not even sort of like remotely bad things happen and was just this major disappointment to the very end. So if there was a major solar flare that could have ended modern civilization as we know it, I think we would have knew it. You know what I'm saying?
I'm gonna hop on that. I'm also going to say number three.
I'm going to go with number one.
I think you told them all with real story. Like they had a real story to them, but I just don't, the third one, it just felt too story for me to believe it. I'm going to say three.
Max?
I'm also between one and three, but one like seems just crazy enough to be real. Like, and I haven't heard anything about that. And I agree with Eben that like 2012, I think I would remember something like that, you know, that would be news that I would know. So number three.
You guys, I stressed about these all day, and none of you guessing the correct lie has made my evening. So thank you all. It was number two, bitches. Oof. Kessler syndrome. And guess what? I even found a way to squeeze in another space danger. Kessler syndrome is actually the same thing as an ablation cascade, which is a space danger of our own making because we have shot so many satellites or old cars or space junk and debris into our orbit, Earth's orbit.
Getting back on capitalism. Getting back
Thank
on
you very much. All roads, Jean Valjean, all roads lead to capitalism. Our orbit is so full of junk that we are about moments away from a Rube Goldberg type catastrophic event where a rogue meteor hits a satellite, that hits another satellite, that hits another satellite, knocking out all the satellites in our orbit and potentially shooting debris onto Earth. So, I don't know, reactions to being just wildly wrong?
It hurts.
Well, I knew about the solar flare thing and I totally forgot about these like wild ass pictures of like what's orbiting around Earth. I can't show my phone because that really won't show.
We're on an audio podcast. Let me just show you this photo.
No, like look up Kessler syndrome. It has a very beautiful and disturbing pictures of like all the different shit that is like circling our planet. And you'll see like Earth is just bathed in white little dots because there's just so much shit.
Is there a different name for all those like effects on astronauts, or was that all just a lie?
Yes, I definitely used entirely real space symptoms, but I just called it
with the fake name. I like it.
And yeah, I'm glad that 2012 was such a stressful year for all of you that you guys missed this like little bit of space news.
Sixth grade sucked.
Hey man, 2012, I was 12 years old. That's right when I figured out how to look up porn. So it was a pretty busy year in my life.
And meanwhile, you were moments away from death.
I'm gonna say like the only reason I knew about it is like I was a nerd and I watched like Nova all the time. Otherwise, like the news does not really give a shit about solar flares. Like they really don't.
Basically, the sun's activity fluctuates, high activity every 11 years and then like very low activity. So I guess we're coming back to high activity, or maybe we're at the point of low activity. That I don't know. It wasn't one of my facts.
High activity, let's go.
Yes, we've been comedy bold, but I have been spaced out.
Whoa.
Wow, this is like really, man, these are really, this has been a really cool experience.
I'm so glad.
This is excellent. Wow. I learned a lot here, you know? Wow, guys. I was looking up space facts. You put space on the map for me.
Evan and my podcast teacher told me, and I quote, "You should be the next Neil deGrasse Tyson."
Yes.
You should be the next.
You should be the next.
Preach space to the masses.
Those are big shoes to fill.
Yeah, start trying to be like, Hawaiians, you don't deserve a mountain.
I really hope that this is the breakout moment for Daisy to ascend into Neil deGrasse Tyson momentum. Nothing else on the show makes it. No one else. It's the one, but she just, this little fact moment, some Nova thinks to themselves, well, that's a host we need. And that's what happens.
Hey, if Nova's paying, me and Wikipedia would love a job.
you can up that donation to $2 a month? Maybe three?
Don't get crazy.
Oh, okay. All right, $150.
The information is free. Let's not forget that. All right, it's a donation, okay?
All right, we'll take that time to thank Daisy so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you. This was a lot of fun. I enjoyed this very much.
Space was a great topic. We should just become a space podcast.
A spodcast.
You guys could take the name, too.
Can we become the second best space podcast? Mm-hmm. Can you like become the best, Daisy? And then can we just constantly just be in your shadow and be like the guys who they invite to the podcast awards, but like we know we're gonna lose?
Very much you guys rush onto the stage behind me, but there's no time for anyone.
And then they grab us and like every time we're like, we were drunk and it won't happen again. And, like,
but really we were dead cold sober and we really just wanted the moment of fame with you on the stage. And we had to explain our behavior through alcoholism because, you know, having a dream in today's world is just not acceptable anymore, you know?
We should all move past defining ourselves by my success and start to just try to be happy people. And that is the greatest anti-capitalist move of all.
Be happy people in Daisy's shadow. And that's where we will end.
We'll be Earth during a solar eclipse.
Heck
constantly
yeah.
In the shadow.
And she is our star. Wow. Well, not only that, but this is actually the first half of this entire show. You actually get literally double the content from here, because in the second half, you're going to hear a lovely 5 minutes from none other than Jordan Big Bear Jones himself. And then we get to interview Jordan Big Bear Jones on his comedic process, what he finds funny, how he became a comedian, why they call him Bear. Just kidding. We're never going to answer that question for you. But stay tuned. You'll enjoy. I promise.
Well, I got to know. Why do you call him Bear?
No, we seriously want to answer that question.
Yeah, we can't say that.
We can't.
For legal reasons.
Okay, for now.
It's in the contract.
T- to whatever poor schmuck that came across this, you know, I'm doing my best. I'm doing my best. I haven't done stand-up since the Rona. And it's hard to do stand-up when you're not actually, like, standing in front of anyone. And it's weird, because it's weird. You know what I mean? To, like, talk to nobody. It's, like, kind of pathetic. And I realized, you know, I realized it's on a bell curve of how pathetic it is. But it all there's also, like, a thing where I go, everything's on a bell curve. You know what I mean? Like, I pull out my phone earlier because I'm, you know, going to watch some porn. And I stop myself. You know what I mean? I've been having, like, these conversations with God about, like, I just need to watch less porn. Like, I feel weird about it. Because it's like, I watch a lot of porn. You know what I mean? Like, I can tell jokes about it, as you will find out. It's so much so that I've, like, recognized the pattern of porn. Like, and that's like, a lot. Like, you should... You know what I mean? Like, when you start to be able to riff on something, like, it's a little much. But I pull out my phone to, you know, go wank one off, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, nah, I better stop. And then I look at the phone and I go, that's kind of pathetic, you know what I mean? I was about to wank one mobily, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's, you know, like, that's weird. Like, you, like, I, you know, and people have nude pictures on their phone. That's, like, less weird than watching porn on your phone. You know what I mean? Like, because there's not, it's not pathetic. It's like, oh, somebody sent me a nude photo. That's cool. Like, you know, I don't necessarily believe in doing all that. That's a lot for me. I'm a very, you know, black conservative, but I'm not, that's a joke, but I am kind of conservative. And so for me, that's a lot. But I go, that's, like, less weird because somebody sent that to you. That's kind of cool. Watching porn on your phone is really weird. Like, that's when you're like, you really have to wank one on the go. You know what I mean? Like, I can wank one anywhere with the iPhone. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, oh, geez. You know what I mean? And then they have the new Retina displays. So it's tempting. They, like, play games with you. It's like... They play these games. They're like, yo, we got this new 10-inch Retina display. Quibi didn't work. We know people don't watch TV on their phone. You're doing that for people who got to wink off mobily. That's who you're helping. And you know what? Big ups to you for thinking about those people. But, like, that's not fair. They're tempting me. And I'm like, I put my phone down, right? And I put it back into my pocket, and I'm like, oh, shoot, you know, I shouldn't do that. And then I sit down and, like, go to turn on the TV, but then I'm looking at the TV, right? And to somebody who, like, is fighting the urge to, like, you know, go spank one out, you know what I'm saying? It's, like, it's hard to, like, you know, not do it, you know, because it's hard. And you're looking at the TV, and then I go, nah, that's also as pathetic. You know what I mean? Like, it's that bell curve. Like, the screen you watch porn on, it's, like, it's really, it's on a bell curve of how pathetic it is, how big it is. You know what I mean? Like, if it's a really small screen, it's just weird. You're in weird territory. And if it's, like, a TV, like, yeah, you know? And it's the same thing, I think, in how pathetic it is performing in front of people. Because I go, you know, if it's zero people, it's me telling jokes to myself and recording that. Like, that's crazy. That's what a crazy person does. So that's weird. But then if it's, like, I think when it, you know, hopefully when I get famous and everybody loves me, ha ha ha, that was a joke. Can you tell I'm insecure yet? No, it's like on the other side of that bell curve. It's like, if my job is to tell people jokes in front of, like, thousands of people jokes at once, and, like, that's what I'm good for, I think, like, and I respect comics. Like, it's a hard thing to do. And they're some of the most insightful people I've done a lot of stuff with and around comics for a long time. But, like, it's also like, oh, man, I want my job. I want to be able to support myself by telling people jokes, which seems kind of cool. But then you think about, like, your least favorite class clown, and you go, I'm going to work, and that guy's gonna get paid to tell people jokes. And I think it might change your mind. So, you know, I'm doing my best. Like, don't get mad at me, you know, when I start telling these jokes and feel sort of weird about it. And, like, I tell a lot of these jokes where, you know, I started to feel convicted about them because I'm a Christian, and I'm like, Lord, I can't be telling some of these jokes. And we talked about it, and, like, I know Christian friends of mine who hear these jokes, and sometimes they get really, like, nervous, and I'm like, no, dude, like, that was my lived experience, you know what I mean? I'm not gonna shy away from that, so just bear with me as I tell these jokes, You know, I knew I was going to have 5 minutes and I knew that this was going to be heard on a podcast. So I was sort of thinking about meta ways to incorporate that in a joke. And I came up with this really funny one. So it goes like this.
Guys, if you're joining us for the second segment of the Comedy Bold podcast right now, that means you just listened to a hilarious 5 minute set from the none other but Big Bear Jordan Jones himself.
Yeah. That last joke is crazy. That last joke is bananas. I hope you liked it. Good.
If you guys are a little confused because you thought to yourself, oh, the Comedy Bold podcast, they do that thing called the Comic Spotlight in the second half. They bring on an up-and-coming comedian to interview them, and you're thinking, oh, there's only two comedians in the booth. That's because we've been doing a little special thing. We thought that it would be fun for you guys to get to know Bear and I a little bit more.
Yeah.
So last episode, we recorded Bold's sort of ins and outs of comedy. I did a set about porn. If you want to go check it out, it's there.
Yeah, I also did a set about porn. Yeah.
Wow. So. Can you tell we spend so much time together?
Oh my God.
Oh God. And this week we're interviewing the wonderful and Comedy Bold's own Jordan Jones to get his insight on comedy.
Yeah.
And then next episode we will go back to the outside comedian and just Jordan and I interviewing.
Yeah.
But, you know, sit back, learn a little bit about us, so that way maybe when you hear us blabbing in the first half, you kind of makes a little bit more sense now, is the hope, I guess.
Hopefully, yeah.
Hopefully. Okay, so let's dive right into it. Tell me, Bear, if you could describe yourself for the people, like, interested in comedy. I'm talking your comedian dating profile. What does your comedian dating profile look like to you?
I'm like, okay, this is going to be sketchy to say. I'm like Bill Cosby, pause, but on a personal note, way not skeevy. And I think my jokes are a little more risque, though. I think instead of being a D-bag in real life who's literally a villain, I think I talk like on, and I tell all these stories in a similar kind of way. I think I'm relatively clean, similarly. I'm not an evil man in real life. But in my sets, I think I'm a little more harsh than, like, I am certainly more harsh than that. But I think that, like, storytelling, comedy, yada, yada, yada. Like, I go on, but I think it's always to the end of a story. And those stories, I will break off into tangents. So, yeah, Bill Cosby, less douchey in real life, more douchey in his jokes. That's, I think, what I'd say.
Sure. Okay. A very, I don't want to use the word, but a very bold choice to lead with. Yeah, Bill Cosby, pause. I think
we lost half the audience right there. Let's just power through.
They didn't make it to the pause. It was that quick and they still didn't get there. If you're still with us, because that didn't deter you, which I hope it didn't, because Bear is definitely, he's not evil in real life quite like Bill Cosby, for sure.
For sure.
Knowing that, what is kind of going on with your comedy in the sense that what do you like to joke about now? What have you been joking about, you know, since the pandemic has kind of been going on? What have you been focusing on?
Man, it's crazy because, like, Bold knows this, I took a break from comedy. As a matter of fact, Comedy Bold is the first comedy I'd done in a while because I looked at him and said, I gotta stop telling jokes. And it's because I started to feel like a separation between me and the audience. Like, I would tell a lot of jokes that had to do with the Black experience, right? Because, like, I mean, that's just part of it. I tell jokes about my life like every other comedian. I happen to deal with wild stuff. I had a professor insist that I take MLK Day off and, like, miss a meeting that we were all having, but, like, insist that I miss this meeting and, like, singled me out in front of this entire class. And I'm like, okay, like, calm down, man. Like, that's hilarious. And I like telling jokes about that stuff. And so, yeah, it's my real life. So I think I don't like to say, oh, I was telling Black jokes, because I wasn't. I was doing the same thing every comic does. I was telling jokes about my life. But it was like, you know, you start to feel that if you start, for me, right, doing a bunch of comedy in front of audiences that, like, literally don't understand your experience. Yes, you telling those jokes can help them understand. But I was in my head about, oh, am I telling these jokes and are they understanding it and, like, dialoguing with it, or are they really just laughing at me? And I started to internalize it kind of weird. And it was hard for me to really separate
are my jokes funny or am I just getting laughed at a level? So since the pandemic, then I've started writing jokes about more personal stuff. Like at the set you just heard, right? I talk about porn and dealing with that. And I talk about my relationship with God and dealing with that. That's very personal stuff that I've never in the history of all the comedy I've ever done, have talked about that kind of thing. But I think now I'm realizing, like, why not? You know what I mean? Like, that's who I am just as much as anything else. And right. To tell you the truth, like, it's going to challenge people in a similar way, and it may free people in a similar way. So, like, that's just as valuable. And being a human is the coolest thing we get to do. Like, being Black isn't the coolest part of my life. Like, the coolest part of my life is the fact that I'm a human and I'm alive. Like, there are a finite number of us. Right. Nobody will ever get the Jordan experience again when I'm gone. You know what I mean? And, like, why not give them the full experience while I can? So I think that's where my jokes are now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so interesting to hear that you say that you've, you know, kind of made this comedic transition, in your comedy.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious, we normally ask, you know, comedians what made them start doing comedy. I want to kind of modify that. Has what made you start doing comedy, has that changed now since you've kind of, you know, switched around your comedy? Or do you think now you're back to your core ideals of when you did start? And what, you know, what did get you there to get going? And are you still on that train or do you feel like you've moved?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Because, like, you know, Calvin Lane, if you haven't seen that episode, go a few episodes ago. Calvin Lane was on here, and Calvin Lane is a good friend of mine. Calvin Lane prompted me to start doing stand-up. So in a way, like Calvin really did encourage me, and he did believe in me. But I think I started doing comedy for me. Like, and that's not unfair. Like, I think the comedian gets something out of doing comedy, and I think you should as a comedian. If you don't get anything out of doing comedy, don't do it. And, like, it, you know, there's a dialogue there. The audience is getting something, you're getting something. So I think I was doing it all for me. I don't think I cared about the audience. I thought in my head when I started, as cocky as this is, I was like, I'm a funny guy and I'm going to get up here and I'm going to basically ask people to prove me wrong. Like, try not to laugh at what I'm saying because I know it's funny, but bet you won't laugh. I bet you will. Right. Like, and so for me, it was like this sort of ego driven, thing where I got to say what I wanted to say and get validated for it implicitly. And, like, to me, I didn't think anything about it. I think that's why I started, like, to get that egotistical validation to be able to say I'm funny unequivocally, right? Like, you can't check that. And to say what I wanted and go kind of unchecked, right? And not in the wildest inappropriate way, but in a way. And I think now it's more, I understand more the value of what you say. Like, me as a comedian, I have the power to help somebody change their life. Because if I talk my shit and that shit is something you deal with, right, that may change your life. Because you may have never heard anybody talk about that. I never heard anybody talk about dealing with porn growing up. I had one pastor talk about it. One pastor would talk about it occasionally. Really cool guy. And that really did empower me. But, like, the men in my life don't talk about it. And so I have a porn addiction. I guess, few months sober. I've been sober for a while, but I genuinely don't know. I've lost count of the days. I should check. I have a little counter that I keep. I'm going through that myself. The men in my life, I know plenty of men in my life who are actually dealing with that who don't talk about it. So, like, if I stand on a stage with a mic and I talk about that, they may free somebody else up to go get the help they need or to talk about it or to be a person. So I think I do it now more for the audience. Like, I still get something out of it, but more for the audience. Yeah.
Right. That's amazing, man. That really is awesome. And I think, you know, for those people who have never done stand-up at home, that what Bear is talking about, that feeling of saying something that people resonate with, not just laugh at, but resonate with on stage.
Yeah.
I would think that you'd agree. There's nothing quite like that feeling when you see someone actually resonate with what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think if anybody can understand what it's like when somebody says something and you resonate with it, it's very akin to that. Like, I think it's less that. I think it's more powerful having been an audience member, seeing somebody say something that I resonate with, than it is for me as the guy saying the thing that somebody else resonates with. But I know that feeling of the audience. So I know how valuable that is. And right. that feeling that you get maybe when a stand-up comic says something and you're like, I know exactly what he's talking about. That's crazy. And even if you've ever had that with something deeper, when it's like a real issue or something really is at stake and you're like, I know exactly what he's talking about. Dude, that dude is empowering the heck out of me. And I say dude, like general, like gender, non-specific, right? Like just person. Man, that person is really speaking to me. That has such value. Yeah.
Right. Which, you know, kind of leads us into our next question. Great. Because I think what you're talking about, every artist really wants people to look at their art and take value away. So, and to capitalize on this is great. So what advice would you have for up and coming artists who are looking to, you know, start their journey as a comedian?
Yeah. I mean, I want to say believe in yourself, but if you're thinking about doing stand-up comedy, you probably do. Like, I think people say being a stand-up comic is like, it takes a lot of bravery, is what people always say. I don't necessarily agree with that. Being the one dude in the room with the mic and getting to say what you want to say, even if nobody's going to laugh, even if you get booed, you know, saying what you want to say, I think sometimes, like, the loudest person in the room is the loneliest person in the room. So I don't know if it's always like sheer bravery, but if you're thinking about doing comedy, you probably do believe in yourself. You probably do believe you're not going to really do terrible. You're probably like, oh, okay, I got that. So I think apart from that advice, it'd be believe in what you're saying, like, and believe in the value of doing what you're doing. There is a value, like as I just described, right? There's a value to stand-up comedy. And people don't take it seriously. Like if I tell people I'm a stand-up comic and they always go, you're a stand-up comic? And I'm like, yeah, I think I'm pretty okay. Right? Like you can't say you're good because then people sort of roll their eyes. But there's value in that, right? And that's like a real thing you want to do. So believe in it. Mm-hmm. Like just believe in that. Stand up on that stage and say, you know, yeah, I believe in myself. But more importantly, you believe in the craft. You believe in what you're doing. And then I think the rest sort of falls into place because you either get big or you don't, but you can do stand-up comedy for the rest of your life at small clubs and still be pouring into people's lives and you can still get something from that. And that might just be what it is. Like you might be the ska garage dad who's like playing with his ska band and like you might be that version of that for a comedian your whole life, but there's still value in that if you believe in it. If you don't believe in it, then I'd say you're not ready. You're not ready to get on the stage. Like, you're not ready. Until you start seeing the value and seeing it for what it is, right? You getting to be the only person in the room with the microphone. You getting to say what you feel. You getting to dialogue with a group of people who just have to listen to what you have to say. Don't take that too seriously, but, you know, at a level, understand that and believe in that. Because if you don't believe in it, then it's just, like, kind of something stupid. If you believe in it, then it can be extraordinary. Yeah.
It's amazing to me how much you are revealing right now the seriousness of comedy in what it really is. And I think that on a superficial level, people don't see that often. And it's amazing right. that you're speaking to that right
and
now.
And I think every comic who does this and takes it really seriously and considers themselves a comic believes in that. Even if they don't say it, they feel it. Like, they're like, yeah, what I'm doing, like, there's something to it that has, like, real value. Like, beyond just making people laugh. Everybody says they love to make people laugh. But beyond that, I think every comedian's got some sort of, like, metal. They've got, like, real metal. And they're like, right. yeah, there's some grit to this. Like, I'm speaking to the truth of reality when other people are not willing to speak to that and they're just willing to lie and other people are willing never to speak up, right? But I'm doing it. And so I think every comic knows how serious that is once they start considering themselves a comic. So I think, you know, if you're going to consider yourself a comic, start looking at comedy for what it really is. And that is what it really is. Yeah.
That's great. That's great advice. We move on to the next question, which is Big Bear's favorite on this show.
Ooh.
And so I'm just so curious to hear how he's going to answer.
Hell yes.
It. Jordan, tell me, when you tell a joke and it totally bombs, just crashes and burns, how does that feel and what do you do to respond? And on the flip side, when it totally lands, everyone's laughing, you know it was one of the best jokes of the night. What does that feel like for someone who's never done stand-up before?
Shoot. You know, it's Okay, so I don't want to spend forever answering this question, so I'll give it like this. I had a friend come over this weekend, beautiful young lady who I will always love. And I reached out to put my hand on her hand because she's telling me about, like, this relationship that she's in and, like, how difficult it is becoming in a certain facet. So I reached out to put my hand on her hand just to be like, dude, yeah, that sucks. And she pulls her hand away immediately. That's exactly what it feels like when people don't laugh at your jokes. Like, when your joke bombs, right? Because rarely is your joke actually, like, rarely are you going to get boos. Rarely. You have to say something inflammatory to get boos. And if you say something inflammatory, then I think there's a different thing because you're like, oh, I offended people. If you have a conscience, then it's like, oh, I offended people. This is bad to say. And then I think you're embarrassed in that regard. And then you just kind of shut up. Like, then you shut up and you, like, take the little bit of the boos and you move on with the quickness. I think when the audience doesn't laugh or when the joke bombs insofar as, like, nobody gets it or everybody realizes you're trying to make a joke and it doesn't really land, they're like, then it's that pull the hand away. And so what can you do? If you're a comic, you're going to make a joke about that. Like, I looked her dead in the face and was like, okay, well, that is the last time we ever try to connect. I just want to let you know. Somewhere down the road, you're going to try to really, like, you know, feel something and, like, I'm going to be there for you. But I just want you to know, when you're this close, when you really feel like I'm going to give you that hug, I'm just going to pull away. And I want that to, like, sit in your mind, and I want you to think about that forever. I just want you to remember, when you need me at the most, I will not forget this moment, and it'll come back on you. And she started laughing, right? And she blushed. So that's what you do. You just take it and you run with it. You can address it if you feel like you want to address it. I think addressing it has power to it. And I think there's something more to that, because that's somebody who really is brave. That's where the bravery comes in. When you address it, when you're like, well, that joke was ass, huh? Like, people resonate with that. Whereas if you try to keep powering through it, I think that shows more weakness. Like, that's an inability for you to identify your wrongs and, like, check it. So I think you got to work on that. And then when it lands, man, it's a lot like when you're flirting with somebody and it gets to that level where you've basically all but said, hey, I'm into you, but it's still flirting. Like, it just feels like there's a safety net, if that makes sense. And I'm a big romantic, so maybe this is, like, what it is for me. But it's like, okay, there's a safety net. It's not like, oh, there are huge stakes. Like, I'm not going to fail this person, right? But all those people in that audience at that point, and for me, I just go dark. Like, I go blind and I go deaf. When I start hearing laughter, I can't hear anything and I am gone. Like, I can't tell you some of what my whole sets went, like how they went, because once I hear that first laugh, I just sit in that pocket and it just becomes so comfortable. And it is that flirting, because at that point, then you stop sort of like thinking of what do I have to say to impress that person? And you just really have that dialogue. And they're blushing and you're blushing and you're having a good time. It becomes that where you sort of like lose yourself in it. Just feel comfortable and keep going. Like, and you'll do the best set of your life. Like, those are the best sets.
It's so funny because we've prompted every comedian we've asked on how to explain that to someone who's never done stand-up before. And I feel like Bear here gave you the best answer we've received so far on if you've never done stand-up, that really, as he said those two things, I was like, wow, that is what it feels like.
Yeah.
That's really, yeah. That hits. So that's really informative for all those people who don't do stand-up.
It's a hard feeling, man. It's crazy. Yeah.
Okay, Bear. Last question for you. The heaviest question by far, but my question. Favorite nonetheless. Tell me why comedy matters to you.
Yeah, I think I spoke to it earlier in a few different facets. But to tell you the truth, I think it's liberating. And I think there are so many levels to that. Like, there's a level where it's liberating for me, right? I don't feel heard in my day-to-day. I'm a very weird guy, and I am existing in a way that is very adjacent to what is normal. I'm just weird, and I'm very strange, and people don't always understand what I'm saying. But when I make them laugh, like, then you get it? So it's liberating for me. It allows people to step into my mind in a way that is that they can handle. And that is comfortable for me to do, and I don't feel like is encroaching. And it is like a beautiful consensual relationship in that way. Like, I give them consent to step into my thoughts, and they have consent to laugh, and we get along. So it's liberating for me. I think it's liberating for the audience because they get to laugh. I think laughter does that. It frees you up to laugh, right? Like, a lot of people don't have joy in their lives. You have to learn to let yourself laugh. If a comedian can make you laugh, they've hijacked the need for you to let yourself. Now you are laughing, and it's because somebody is not making, like, forcing you to do it, but somebody's making you do that. So I think that can be liberating. But to be quite honest with you, and this is like a rough thing to say in a comedy vein, but like, I think people laugh too much. I think we like want to laugh too much. And I think sometimes we don't want to feel real emotion. We don't want to feel sad or feel hurt. And those are just parts of life. And those are just as beautiful. So to be honest with you, there are heavy things that I think need to be talked about more often, period.
Do you mean outside of comedy? The heavy things that need to be talked about outside of comedy?
Yeah, period. Yeah, just in general, right? Like, you know, a bunch of people have porn addictions, but they feel shame and can't talk about them. A bunch of people, feel like they don't know how to quite be a man in the vein of, like, toxic masculinity versus masculinity that is valuable. People feel like, you know, they believe in things and they don't feel like those things are valuable to talk about because they think people are going to shortchange them because they believe in them. Or, like, race issues, right? Like, or gender issues, all these things. And so I think I like stand-up, and I think stand-up comedy is valuable because you're only going to let me talk about those things if I make you laugh. Like, sometimes I do sets where I'm just talking about things I need to talk about. The only reason I am afforded the opportunity to share this with a large group of people is because I make you laugh. So I bite the pill and say, okay, let me make this as funny as possible so that I can talk about what needs to be talked about. And I think in that way, it's liberating as well. Like, it allows you to say the truth, and the price is being funny. And most of the time, the price for saying the truth is so high. Like, it could be your job, it could be your life. But if I'm on a stage, the price for telling the truth is just being funny. That's a price I'm willing to pay. Like, and that's a pretty cheap price comparatively. So I think that's why comedy is valuable. Comedy is the closest thing we'll get to ever really being able to share the truth with each other straight up. Because if I make you laugh, then it's fine. Versus me being like, I cry in the shower every day. And I've told Bold this before. I cry in the shower every day. And there was a period where I was doing that a lot. I cry in the shower like every day, if not, you know, 4 times a week minimum. And then I'd be like, yeah, well, you know, I'm just crying in the shower every day. 4 times a minimum. And like, when it's funny, then he's like, that's hilarious. But dude, if you ever need to talk, let me know. Like, really real. Right? Whereas if I was like, I cry in the shower every day, 4 times a week at minimum, he'd be like, oh, do you need to talk about it? Like, the ease of the truth is different then. So I think comedy makes the truth easy, and people need the truth.
Wow. It reminds me quite a bit of, and you've heard me say this lots of times, the however offensive the joke is going to be, it's got to be twice as funny.
Right.
Offensive it's going to be. And it kind of reminds me of that as you're talking about, you know, how you deliver and what stand up allows you to do. I've seen, to kind of anecdote for the audience, I've seen Bear do stand up countless times. And I have to say, like, the things that you think about after Bear's set, he really does deliver on this. And so I hope
I appreciate that.
Everyone really takes away that comedy can be this vehicle to speak on truth, because I think that you do that in your comedy very well, and I think that it is a thing that, you know, comedians attempt to do and could do more in the future.
Right. It makes you think, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you were listening to this and you think that Bear is just one of the greatest comedians in the world, it's because he really is.
I don't even know about that.
You can find Big Bear Jones on all social media platforms, even though he's not good at it.
Big.bear.jones, find me. Yeah. I'm on Insta.
It sticks to the moniker. He can't make it simpler than that, folks.
I do my best, dude. I just started posting to my story, dude. How hip am I? I'm hip with the kids and stuff.
I have to let everyone know that he messaged in the Comedy Bold Slack chat how to post on his Instagram story before he did
Yeah, I did. And I figured it out myself. I was so proud of myself. I was so proud. I did it. Yeah, I felt
as
hip.
He should have been. Folks, thank you for staying for another wonderful episode of the Comedy Bold podcast. Make sure to share this episode with your friends, your not friends, You know, make sure to put it everywhere that you want it to be seen, which should be everywhere.
Should be everywhere.
Thank you guys very much for listening. This has been the Comedy Bold Podcast. I've been Bold.
It's been an honor. I've been Bear.
Catch you guys next episode.
1 It was a blast. I'm not doing anything these days, except for finding space facts and figuring out how to frame them into convincing lies. So,
hey, you did a good job.
Thank you.
I was convinced.
I know. Oh.
I think you were actually, you were the only person who literally had no one vote against you.
You don't even know how hard I'm going to tell everyone I live with.
Wow.
How hard can you tell them?
Honestly.
She's going to go down. She's going to grab her megaphone and be like, hey, guys.
That could be really exciting for us because you could possibly like double our listenership overnight. So I could be really, that could be really sweet.
I wouldn't get your hopes up.
Cool. Cool. All right. Recording end? Yeah.
All right.